It's time to pick that lawn up by the bootstraps with a healthy dose of Rosie on the House. Get all the advice you could want from the Harper Nursery Boys by dialing 1-888-ROSIE-4U.
I'm ready for you.
You are tuned in to Rosie on the House, your Saturday morning tradition for 29 years. During the break, we took a call. Gentleman wants to know about his ryegrass. Died off, but the Bermuda has not recovered. Is there anything special needing to be done to get that revived?
You know, get in there and make sure you can get that thatch out of there, that dead ryegrass thatch out of the way. It'll come back. It's just going to have to come back all from the roots. We talked about this, you know, at the first part of the show with the perennial ryegrass question. The fact that really the ryegrass lives too long, and when it does, this is what happens. And usually this is when we see the worst of it, when it gets really hot, the night times get hot, and that ryegrass finally dies. Well, that Bermuda can only stay dormant so long. And then it just starts, it's used up all of its stored up carbohydrates. And the only thing left alive in most cases is the root system. And some of that might even be dead. So it may come back splotchy, and it's going to have to then start shooting out runners and filling back in places. You know, little extra hand watering, fertilizing it, and get the dead thatch out of the way. If you have some really, really bad spots, you can actually sometimes have to even resod those.
Lawn. That's a good excuse for artificial turf in a lot of cases.
Just have a winter lawn. I mean, yeah. I'm becoming a bigger believer in just having a winter lawn and let the summer lawn die. You know, well, our code enforcement people won't like that too much in front yards, but you know, why couldn't you just throw some mulch on top of the lawn, have it be a nice mulched looking area?
Now check my memory. Back when you and I were growing up in the 60s or 70s, did people not paint their grass?
There's another option. Green Acres Cemetery painted in the wintertime, not in the summer, instead of putting a winter lawn in.
I think that's genius.
That's one thing that I always say golf courses give people a poor concept, because I see them painting.
A lot of times it's not just on TV or whatever. But, you know, you also got to realize golf courses are generating revenue on that grass. So they're spending lots of time and money fixing sprinkler heads and fertilizing and core. If we all took care of our lawns like they took care of a golf course, you'd have a beautiful lawn. But they got a full-time staff.
So you wouldn't have anything else. You wouldn't get anything else done in the day. But
they're out there core aerifying and dethatching and... And they fertilize a lot, and they apply, you know, iron, and you know that's an asset to them.
You see them hand watering the areas,
the areas that need
a little additional.
Yes, sir.
And they do that, and they spot that daily. They're not waiting. They're looking for dry blades. They're not looking for brown blades.
Right. When they can tell when that grass is starting to stress, it gets a little bit of that bluish color to it. They know. And after a while, they know where those spots are anyway, because they're the same every year, more than likely. So they know what they've got to do. So, I mean, it's hard work. And again, they're generating revenue with that grass.
1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE-4U.
Jennifer wants to jump in here. She hasn't stopped talking about this conference she was at yesterday. The last thing I remember about 9:30 last night, pillow to pillow, was, yeah, and then I met this other woman, and she, and then I faded off.
Yesterday was the Women in Ag Conference in Scottsdale. They move it all over the state so that all the farming women can come. But you talk about an inspiring group of people, and the spirit in the room, just hardworking, salt of the earth, just really care about their industry, care about their animals, care about food and people. They're just an amazing group of people. And a lot of them go for education. They had a biotech teacher. We'll have to have her on sometime. She makes presentations all over the state, and she did an excellent job explaining GMOs and all that.
Nice.
So we'll have her on. That's Katie Atkin, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And then But what I always go for is the stories. I'm a sucker for a good story. And there was a family there from West Africa. And they, in the 1990s, you know, war broke out, and I believe in Somalia, and they moved over to Uganda, ended up in a refugee camp for years. And then some missionaries helped them to get to America. And now they have the Golo family farm over on the west side of town, and they bring their goods to the market in that Phoenix, the big farmer's market in Phoenix. So you can find them. You can look them up on GoloFamilyFarm.com. But just a charming couple. They've been married 40 years, have five kids, all in college, hardworking, genuine, really awesome people. Just really neat to see that success story. And then there was but the theme of the conference was the then and now. Let's see, it's called We've Come a Long Way. So they had one segment about then and now. So like the Hickmans were there, and Gertie was telling the story of starting with 500 chickens. And now they have what? 7.5 million.
13.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. Well, but on that site, well, anyway.
Well, yeah. all over.
Yeah, yeah, they've opened other places. Right. But
And was it 500?
That's what she said.
I thought it was like around 49.
Well, I'm sure it started with less than 5. I mean, it probably started with 40 or 50.
Wedding gift. Was this flock of chickens, from what I remember on their website.
Yeah, look what that grew into.
Yeah. Well, Gertie remembered 500. But it was just really cool. They'd have a little video.
She would remember better than I would, for sure.
Well, they had the video of the older farmer and then the new farmers in studio. So the Jennifer Milliken they have a dairy farm, and she talked about her dad having to walk around the dairy farm with little index cards.
It was 1949. That they got those chickens. You That's where the 49 came
from. That was the generation even before then, right? I don't know. Anyway, but the dairy farm, they used to walk around with the little index cards trying to match up, you know, keep record that way. And now she said they're chipped. You walk around and you put on your search all cows born in this year and run your phone there, and it beeps each one that's that one. And you just go, oh, it's this one and this one. And just how much easier it is. Just the technology. They talked a lot about the technology. There was a tree farmer from Waddell talking about the sensors and how much it's helping to save water, and just so much better for the trees and stuff. So it's just amazing.
We use the same amount of water now as we did in the 50s.
Yeah.
With more growth than we had in the 50s. Same amount. Things that come, I always think about my grandma talking about, and they farmed in Coolidge. And talking about the people say the good old days, and she said there were no good old days.
They
she said
worked
wasn't anything,
hard.
There wasn't anything good about them. She said, you know, cooking on a wood stove in a house without air conditioning in the middle of the desert.
They were hardy people, Jay. And they all had they had to give what their biggest challenge was, and all of it was labor. You know, trying to get people out there to
the
work.
The current hardest thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Same thing we talk about.
Well, I'd say that in agriculture, that's probably always been the hardest thing. It's 120. Time to go pick lettuce.
Well, it's seasonal, you know, and so it's hard. But, yeah, just great. Great conference. We'll talk about it throughout the year because I got lots more.
Cool. Very good.
Tell them about the private invitation to the history, the Museum of the West.
I messed up so bad, Jay. So
Personally invited for a private tour of the history of the West in Scottsdale.
That was the reception opening on Thursday night.
She forgot to tell you about
that. I thought it started at 6:30, and so we got there at 6:20.
I got all dressed
and
it was
5 o'clock.
Put on my boots, put on my Sunday clothes.
And they were closing the door.
Oh, man.
I owe him one.
We were walking up, and everybody was leaving. I said, oh, this really is going to be a private showing.
They didn't go for that?
They wouldn't stay
for us. They didn't stay and let you in? Doggone it.
But we're actually having them on in a couple weeks. So.
Well, that might get you another invite.
Maybe.
Karen wrote in and wants to know how to grow onions. She says, every time I plant them, whether spring or fall, they just turn into scallions. I want regular sliced and baseball-sized
onions. Right. So you plant in the fall, in October, and you plant them from seed. Don't use the onion sets. Actually buy a seed onion, a Gran X or a Texas Grano or one of those, and do it in the middle of October and plant them from seed. And then you got to thin them so they're spaced. And you can use those for your scallions, your green onions, as you're thinning them.
So that's one thing I've always wondered on the package. And I do it. I'm a horrible thinner. I see those little sprouts and I don't want to mess a single one up.
Right.
Why don't you just plant how many you need? Why plant more and then thin?
Well, have you tried doing that?
No.
It's pretty hard to plant those seeds, those little itty-bitty tiny seeds, that far apart.
But every seed package says that. Plant this many per row, and thin to this many once they've
right,
started.
Because it's a lot easier to do that than to try and plant. You know, depending on the size of the seed, some of those doggone things are almost microscopic, you know. And then here's a little trick that will help you thin as you plant. So take your seeds and get a mason jar, put them in a mason jar and put some potting soil or even sand in that mason jar and shake it all up and mix so that you have then sand or fine potting soil in between all the seeds and mix it up. And then you can actually even poke some holes or a hole in the top of the mason jar and use that as your seeder and go down. And that will thin it because you'll have then, you know, particulate matter between each seed as you go down the row and seed it. That works pretty well. You still might have to thin a little bit. And then sometimes you can find with carrots and radishes in particular, seed tape, where the individual seeds, they have taken them and glued them or stuck them onto a tape. So you just lay that tape out in the row, and they're thinned for you that way. That's cheating, but it works pretty darn good. It's pretty good, pretty easy to do. Try the little jar of potting soil with your seeds mixed in with it, and that'll help you.
And as we're talking about expectations and things growing, when you say fall for planting onions, is that September, October?
October 15th, if you want to be just, you know, there's a seed called, I think it's Texas Granix or Granix 1015, meaning it's supposed to be planted on the 10-15, October 15th. That's just the length of time it's going to take for those onions to mature before it gets hot. And it takes a long time to grow. You plant them in October, and you're probably going to harvest them in May.
Wow.
So if you want a big onion, so something like that.
Well, we appreciate the email, Karen. Good luck with those onions. They turn out. You owe us one.
That's right.
Nice cold, fresh slice right on top of a hot, juicy, medium-rare cheeseburger.
Come on now. Making me hungry.
Let's get to Lynn in Sun City at 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you. Good morning, Lynn.
Good morning. I have a couple of succulent hanging plants that were doing really good the beginning of the summer, and now it's like overnight they're just starting to dry up. I try to water them every day and sprinkle them, the leaves and stuff, but it just is like getting out of hand.
We'll answer that right after this.